Welcome to the Deep Dive. We are going straight into the heart of modern healthcare technology. We're tackling this revolutionary shift that's being fueled by connected devices, the IoT.
Things like smartwatches, constant cardiac monitors.
Right, even smart glasses. They're all feeding this critical real-time patient data like heart rate and blood sugar into these enormous digital systems. Now, this shift is it's incredible for personalized care, for emergency response, and for predictive analytics, but it also creates this profound, almost life or death tension.
It really does.
Because on one side, you desperately need real-time speed to deliver, say, a life-saving alert.
Milliseconds matter.
But on the other, you require the absolute ironclad protection of patient privacy, which is, strictly mandated by global rules like IPR. So the core mission for this deep dive, based on the research you brought in, is really understanding this high wire act. How do you guarantee the speed you need to save a life while also providing mathematically rigorous security guarantees?
That tension is the central problem the research addresses. We're diving into a proposed integrated framework that really tackles this head-on. Our mission is to unpack its three core pillars.
Okay.
You've got a multi-layer IoT edge cloud architecture for the speed component,
Okay.
then differential privacy for confidentiality, and finally, blockchain technology for integrity and accountability. We're going
Yeah.
to show you not just the tech, but how this whole synthesis achieves both efficiency and quantifiable security.
And what's immediately clear from the sources is that just following the basic regulatory compliance, mandating some encryption or having audit trails, that's just not enough
Not
anymore.
even close.
The standard anonymization methods we've all been relying on are proving to be, porous.
That's right. Let's start with what we can call the privacy illusion. It's this widespread but false belief that if you just strip away the direct identifiers, a patient's name, their exact street address, that the data is somehow protected.
And we've seen definitive proof that this just doesn't work.
We have. The classic, really well-known example is the work of Latanya Sweeney. She set out to prove how easy re-identification can be.
This is the one that really woke everyone up, right?
It is. She successfully cross-referenced a supposedly anonymous hospital data set and, using just three simple public data points, what we call quasi-identifiers, she re-identified the medical records of the former governor of Massachusetts.
And those three data points were just postcode, date of birth, and gender?
That's it.
That's it. Information that's often easily accessible, maybe from public voter registration records. The fact that combining three non-sensitive attributes can compromise someone's entire medical history it's a terrifying reality.
Absolutely. It tells us that our defense has to move way beyond simple suppression. And so to structure a robust defense, the research first establishes a really detailed threat model, categorizing the adversaries we're trying to defeat.
Okay, let's unpack this threat landscape because each type of attacker is going to need a different kind of defense. First up, the honest but curious.
We call them type I adversaries. These are entities, think researchers, maybe data brokers, or even competitors, who technically follow all the rules and protocols of the system.
So they're not hacking in the traditional sense.
No, not at all. But they have vast computational resources, and they use these sophisticated statistical inference attacks. They analyze the aggregated data that gets released, public averages or correlation stats, and they work backward to re-identify individuals.
Or just figure out if a specific person was even in the data set to begin with.
Exactly, which is known as a membership inference attack. They're basically piecing together a puzzle using data that was supposed to be safe.
Okay, so that's type one. Let's step up the threat level to type two, the actively malicious actors.
The type two attacker is actively trying to break the system. They might attempt to compromise edge nodes or, and this is more subtle, exploit known vulnerabilities in the privacy mechanisms themselves. A great example of this is a gradient leakage attack in machine learning.
Wait, let's pause on that one. What exactly is gradient leakage and why is it so dangerous in healthcare?
So when a machine learning model is being trained, say, to predict heart failure, it updates its internal parameters based on all that sensitive training data. A gradient is essentially the direction and magnitude of that tiny update.
Okay.
An attacker, even if they only see those update signals, the gradients during the training process can mathematically reverse engineer that signal. And they can infer surprisingly specific details about the raw patient data that was used to generate it.
That's incredible. So even the process of learning, not just the final model, can leak private data.
Precisely. And finally, you've got the most challenging foe of all, the type three threat, the insider adversary.
The person on the inside.
Exactly. This is a user with legitimate authorized credentials, a hospital administrator, a database manager, who abuses those privileges.
Mm-hmm.
And because they have valid system access, they can get to the raw, unprotected data before any privacy transformations, like differential privacy, have even been applied.
So external firewalls and encryption won't stop them?
They're already inside the castle.
So, to counter this whole spectrum, from the statistical attacks of type 1 to the active attacks of type 2, and this betrayal of trust from type 3, the system has to deliver on 5 non-negotiable security objectives. Confidentiality, integrity, availability.
Especially for emergencies.
Right. And then accountability, and finally, quantifiable privacy preservation. We've defined the threat model, and it's overwhelmingly complex. Now, let's talk about the structural counterattack. How does the architecture itself act as the first line of defense? Let's get into this multi-layered IoT edge cloud system.
So this architecture is really a defense-in-depth strategy. It intelligently distributes the computational load based on how time-sensitive a task is. We start at the bottom with the IoT layer.
Which is just the sensors and wearables collecting the raw data?
Correct, the real-time vitals. Then you move up to the edge computing layer, which is the immediate intermediary.
And why do we need the edge? Why not just send everything straight up to the cloud?
Well, the edge is the layer that's physically located closest to the source of the data. Often it's within the hospital or clinic network itself. Its role is absolutely crucial for time-critical operations.
I see.
When a heart monitor detects a sudden life-threatening anomaly, you just can't afford the latency. You can't wait for that data to travel to a distant cloud, get processed, and then have the alert routed all the way back.
That proximity is key, so the edge handles the immediate alerts, the anomaly detection.
Exactly. It minimizes network hops, processes data locally, and does it fast. Now, contrast that with the cloud computing layer, which sits at the very top. This is your centralized powerhouse. It's dedicated to the heavy-duty tasks.
Like long-term storage of electronic health records?
Exactly, the EHRs. And also those resource-intensive batch analytics, like training complex epidemiological forecasting models.
So the architecture really separates the urgent tasks from the massive data storage tasks. And that separation alone sounds like it would improve resilience.
It absolutely does. And the performance evaluation in the source material proves the necessity of the edge. For critical emergency response scenarios, the research shows that edge computing delivered an 8x latency reduction.
8 times faster.
Yeah. We're talking about 15.4 milliseconds for processing and alerting versus 123.2 milliseconds if that same task were run entirely in the cloud.
That is a staggering speed up. It really validates why this hierarchical structure isn't just a nice to have, it's potentially life-saving.
And from a security perspective, this layered approach limits the scope of a breach. If a single low-powered edge node gets compromised, the centralized cloud resources, which contain all the EHRs, remain protected. It's compartmentalization.
It enhances availability and security. Okay, so the architecture provides the speed and the structure, but it doesn't solve that core confidentiality problem, the one exposed by the LaTanya Sweeney case.
No, it doesn't.
And that brings us to pillar two, differential privacy, the formal mathematical guarantee.
Right. And this is the technology that's designed specifically to defeat those sophisticated statistical inference attacks from the type I and type 2 adversaries.
Okay, so let's really unpack DP. What does that mathematical guarantee actually promise the individual patient?
It's defined by an astonishingly simple premise. Differential privacy ensures that when an analysis is run on a data set, the addition or removal of a single individual's record, so you being included or you being excluded, does not materially change the output of the analysis.
So if an attacker looks at the result, they can't determine with any real certainty whether I was in that data set or not. My presence is mathematically indistinguishable.
Precisely. And this guarantee is quantified by the privacy budget, which is represented by the Greek letter epsilon.
Epsilon.
Think of epsilon as a dial that controls the amount of noise random data that you inject into the system. A smaller epsilon means you're adding more noise.
Which gives you stronger privacy protection.
Yes, but it inevitably results in data that's less faithful to the original. It could degrade the utility.
And when you're implementing DP, the strategy often depends on where you apply that noise. The source has talked about 2 main strategies.
Yes, centralized DP and local DP. With centralized DP, you need a single trusted curator who applies the noise, but only to the final aggregated query result before it's released.
Okay.
Local DP, on the other hand, is often seen as the gold standard for pure privacy. The noise is applied directly to each individual data point before it ever leaves your device or your sensor.
But local DP often results in less useful data, right? Because every single point is getting jumbled before it's even collected.
That's the trade-off.
Yeah.
And the utility also depends heavily on the type of noise mechanism you choose. The sources compare two major types, Laplace noise and Gaussian noise.
Can you help us visualize the difference between those two?
Sure. Think of Laplace noise as a mathematical shotgun blast.
Yeah.
It has these heavy, exponentially decaying tails, meaning there's a higher probability of injecting a massive random noise value.
So it provides incredibly robust, almost bulletproof privacy.
But those heavy tails can easily ruin the utility of complex, high-dimensional records. It's best for simple things, like numerical counts.
And Gaussian noise.
Gaussian noise is more like a tightly focused spray. It's the classic bell curve. The noise is concentrated around the mean, so it's less likely to inject huge outliers. This approach preserves utility a lot better, making it ideal for high-dimensional data, like the features used in training ML models.
Although the guarantee is slightly weaker.
A little, yes. It requires a second parameter, delta. So the innovative element here is that the paper attempts to bridge that gap with a hybrid approach, trying to maximize that privacy-utility trade-off across the huge variety of healthcare records.
A hybrid model.
Exactly. The framework uses a hybrid Laplace-Gaussian mechanism. It dynamically assesses the features of the incoming data. Is it a simple count or a complex vector for machine learning? And then it selects the appropriate noise distribution. The goal is to get a moderate tail behavior and a superior balance across all these different data sets.
Which ensures the data is useful for both the emergency alerts and the complex long-term research.
That's the idea.
So now we get to the proof. Does this mathematically protected data still enable viable prediction? This is where the machine learning integration comes in.
Right. The research tested four standard ML algorithms that are very relevant to healthcare analytics. You have K-means for unsupervised clustering, and then three supervised prediction methods, logistic regression, random forest, and naive Bayes.
And they were all subjected to these DP mechanisms across a really wide range of privacy budgets.
Yes, the experiments covered everything from nearly impossible privacy, like an epsilon of 0.5, all the way up to a more moderate setting of 10.0.
And what was the fundamental finding about that trade-off?
Well, unsurprisingly, the supervised algorithms consistently maintained better performance than the unsupervised K-means when noise was introduced. But the critical takeaway was identifying the operational sweet spot.
The sweet spot for input perturbation on these real-world healthcare data sets.
Yes. The practical epsilon threshold for maintaining high utility, the point where the data is still viable for research, was found to be at or above an epsilon of 5.0. At that specific threshold, supervised algorithms like logistic regression and random forest maintained really robust predictive power. They were achieving 82% to 84% accuracy compared to the non-private baseline models.
That is a massive finding. You can train an 84% accurate predictive model for population-level clinical research and still maintain a strong privacy guarantee.
That's it.
So that's the utility side established. Now, what about the flip side? How do we know the attackers are truly thwarted at that Exelon 5.0 level?
For that, we have to look at the adversarial evaluation results.
Yep.
This testing showed that even though the models retained 82, 84% accuracy,
which is great,
the DP framework dramatically reduced the success of adversaries who are trying to reconstruct the original patient data used for training.
The numbers must be pretty clear on this.
Oh, they are. The numbers here really define the protection. At the recommended epsilon of 5.0, the DP framework reduced the data reconstruction correlation by a significant 70%. It dropped from a baseline of 1.0, which is perfect reconstruction, all the way down to 0.304.
Wait, hold on. So even if the model is 84% accurate in its predictions, the attacker who's trying to reverse engineer the original raw data is, they're essentially flying blind.
That's precisely the implication. The framework demonstrates that the release analytical result is useful, but the underlying data remains secure from reconstruction. It empirically confirms robust protection against those sophisticated Type I inference attacks.
That addresses the confidentiality of the data, what an adversary can infer. But as we discussed, we still have to worry about integrity.
Right.
Protecting against a malicious Type 2 attacker modifying a medical record or a Type 3 insider deleting an audit log to cover their tracks, this requires Pillar 3, blockchain technology.
Exactly. DP protects what is learned from the data. Blockchain protects the data itself and the processes applied to it. This is where the decentralized, immutable ledger steps in to shield against both internal and external tampering.
And since this is a permissioned blockchain, what are the key features that make it such a potent integrity shield for this healthcare ecosystem?
Well, first and foremost is immutability. Once a data record or a log detailing its processing is stored on the chain, it cannot be retroactively altered. That ensures the highest integrity for the entire medical record history.
Okay.
Second, time stamping and traceability. This provides an instant, auditable history of data provenance. Every single access, every transformation, every query is chronologically recorded.
And crucially, that prevents a malicious actor from tampering with the history itself. So if an insider tries to cover up a bad action, the blockchain reviews the initial, untampered record.
Correct. Which brings us to the third point, accountability. Because all system operations require cryptographically signed transactions, every action is attributable to a specific authorized entity. An insider can't just claim they didn't do something if their private key signed the transaction on the immutable ledger.
That prevents those cover-up attacks on traditional centralized audit logs. It's a powerful defense against the Type 3 insider. But I'm really fascinated by how this blockchain interacts with the differential privacy component we just discussed.
This is the real innovation in the integration. The blockchain doesn't just store health records. It stores cryptographic commitments to the privacy budgets, the specific epsilon allocation, and a full record of every single query made against the DP system.
Why is tracking every single query so vital?
It directly combats what are called composition attacks. Think back to that epsilon dial. Every query you run against a DP system uses up a tiny fraction of the total privacy budget. If an attacker runs repeated queries designed to deplete that budget bit by bit, the accumulated noise may eventually become insufficient, and that would allow them to infer information.
I see.
The blockchain creates a verifiable, tamper-proof notary of that budget allocation. It proves that the composition rules were followed and that the DP guarantee remains mathematically intact, even across dozens or hundreds of sequential queries.
So the blockchain acts as the mathematically secure receipt for the privacy guarantee itself. That could resolve so much regulatory friction around data sharing. This has been a truly comprehensive deep dive into building the infrastructure for ethical, high-speed, 21st century healthcare. Let's just recap the integrated solution.
We saw the necessity of the multi-layered IoT edge cloud architecture, and that was proven by the 8x speedup for emergency scenarios. That establishes the foundation of speed and availability.
Layered right on top of that, we added differential privacy, providing the mathematical guarantee of confidentiality. And it achieved the high utility needed for research, 82 to 84% accuracy, while simultaneously giving us robust protection.
A 70% reduction in data reconstruction success.
And finally, the framework is sealed by blockchain technology for integrity and accountability, ensuring that every data movement and every adherence to the privacy budget is verifiable and immutable, defeating that challenging insider threat.
The integration of these formal mathematical privacy guarantees, like differential privacy, with the immutable decentralized trust provided by the blockchain, it fundamentally resolves that traditional trade-off.
It does.
It allows healthcare organizations to share sensitive data with researchers, opening the door to massive medical advancements, all because trust is now enforced by mathematics and code, not just by policy manuals.
That is a profound conclusion. So let's leave you with this final thought to mull over. If we can prove the privacy of health data mathematically, how quickly will patients' trust in data sharing and personalized medicine accelerate? And what new forms of trust automation, like the zero-knowledge proofs mentioned in the future work, will move from cutting-edge research to standard protocol in the next few years? Thank you for diving deep with us. We'll see you next time.